All right, and our last speaker today is Guillaume Baudard. Guillaume is a researcher at INRIA. He's done a lot of work. He's contributed a lot to the study of probabilistic programming. He's worked on compilation of STAN down to Pyro. And he's also studying the idea of reactive probabilistic programming, which is what he's going to talk about today. Welcome, Guillaume.
Thank you, Jean-Baptiste, for the kind introduction, and thank you, Xavier and Jean-Baptiste, for the invitation. It's great to be here with all of you. So I'm going to talk about this line of work that we started with Louis Mandel when I was at IBM Research. And it's a collaboration with a group at MIT with Eric Atkinson, Ben Sherman, Charles Wan, and Mike Carbin, and also Marc Pouzet at ENS. So I come from the synchronous language community, and which are domain-specific languages that were introduced for the design of critical embedded systems. So you can think about a plane, for example, or an aircraft controller. And the idea of these languages is to provide a high-level specification language, and then specialized tools for the verification and compilation of embedded code. And you have strong guarantees that the generated code will be correct by construction. The poster child of this line of research is probably the industrial tool ANSI SCAD that is, for example, used to design airplane controller at Airbus. So one big challenge for this kind of systems is that typically evolve in a noisy environment that they can only perceive through faulty sensors. So for the plane, for example, the plane might enter a cloud and not see what's around it. And furthermore, you can also interact with other autonomous entities. Think of birds, for example, in the case of a plane. So you probably realize that we are flying planes for decades right now, so there obviously is a solution for that. And the classic solution is to rely on stochastic control theory, so to implement advanced controller that can take care of this kind of uncertainty. But implementing these controllers is typically tricky. You need to derive the math by hand and be very careful about your assumption, your noise assumption, and your sensor assumptions, for instance. So that can be error prone. You can also rely on a lot of statistical tests, or actually do both. But this requires a lot of offline data that you need to keep up to date, so that's a difficult problem. And in the case of bird collisions, for example, you might not have access to this kind of data. Okay, so the idea of reactive probabilistic programming that we proposed is to extend synchronous languages with probabilistic constructs. And the main idea is that embedded system designers are using these programming languages, and we want to give them the capabilities to reason about uncertainty explicitly with the tools of probabilistic programming that we've been discussing these past 2 days. And one key feature is that it makes the underlying probabilistic models that you are trying to design with these stochastic controllers completely explicit, and then you defer all the complex math that you need to derive by hand in order to implement that to the compiler or the runtime. Okay, let me just check my watch. Okay, so to give you an overview of how it works, synchronous reactive language is basically a programming language where you deal with streams. So you have everything is a signal. A signal is a stream of value, an infinite stream of values, and a system is a stream processor. So you have here a schematic view of a robot controller, where you have as input two sensors, an accelerometer and a GPS, and you output a command U. So the controller is interacting with the tracker, and at each step, what you want to do is to find your current position. Based on this estimation, you compute the command for your actuator, your motor, or stuff like that. And you do something. You typically move. This will influence your position, so the trackers need to recompute a position, and so on and so on. So you typically have this kind of feedback loop between your component. I'm sorry. Now, the idea of reactive probabilistic programming is to extend this kind of languages with a parallel composition between deterministic controllers, like how you compute the command for your motors, with probabilistic models, for example, a tracker, and that will now output a complete distribution of what is your belief for the position, and the controller can use this entire distribution to compute the command. And then the thing is that your robot will move, which will again influence your environment, so you need to recompute the distribution, and so on and so on. And one key thing here is that the inference is running in the loop with the controller. So you have a streaming process where the probabilistic inference is running and taking inputs from something that is running in parallel and that can be influenced by the output of the inference. Okay? And also, and it was quite a hot topic during this workshop, we need to propose inference schemes that we can use in a reactive setting. Okay, so in the following, I will walk you through the design of the language, where it comes from, and how the extension work, the semantics, and some static analysis we can do on the program. Okay, so the synchronous language that we extended is Zelus, and Zelus comes from a long line of synchronous languages that started with Lustre in the 80s, that some of you may know. That was extended by Marc Pouzet to do some higher order functional programming in synchronous languages in a prototype that was called Lucid Synchron. And then Marc focused on hybrid systems where you mix discrete and continuous time, and he proposed a new language that is called Zelus, and which is the one we used to build our extension. So as I said, Zelus and PropZelus are data flow synchronous programming languages where everything is a stream and you program by defining set of stream equations. The main point is that the time is considered discrete and all your streams advanced in lockstep, and at each time step, you compute the current value of all your streams using the inputs and possible previous values, right? So for instance, constants are lifted to streams. So the constant one is just the infinite stream 1, 1, 1, 1. And you have some temporal operators that allows you, for example, to initialize a stream or shift a stream in time. And you also have control structure to reset the computation of a stream, or you even have a state machine. But let's look at it on an example. So this is probably the most simple example you can write in Zelus. So this is defining a simple counter. So I declare a stream processor using the keyword node that I called NAT, and the input is a stream V, and the output is a stream CPT. And both of those streams will be integers here. And then I can define the value of CPT at each step using two operators. The first one is the arrow here, which is the initialization operator. So what it says is that at the first time step, you take the left-hand side of the operator, V, and at subsequent time steps, you take the right-hand side of the operator, so the previous value of CPT plus one. So I can give the equivalent mathematical definition of the stream CPT, and you see that at the first instant, I take the first value of V, and then I just take the previous value and I add one. So if we look at an execution of this program, at t equals zero, I received one, so I immediately output this value. And then I can receive an input, but I don't really care. What I will do is that I will look at the previous value and add one to compute the next value, and so on, and so on. So you see that we implemented a counter like that. Okay. So starting from this language, the idea of PropZelus is to extend it with the classic probabilistic construct that you can find in Pyro or WebPeople or any generative probabilistic language, really. So you have mainly three constructs. The first is to introduce a random variable x with a distribution d, so this is a sample construct. And you have an observed dy to make the assumption that an input y was sampled from a distribution d. So we have these two constructs because one is an input and the other is the output here. And then the infer operator takes a model m and a stream of observation, and compute a stream of distribution of output for the model M with respect to the observations. So if we look back at the robot example here, one possible implementation of the tracker is the following. So this is a weird HMM or a weird Kalman-Schild. This is a weird hidden Markov model where the state is composed of the position, the velocity, and the acceleration. And at each step, you actually observe the acceleration. But sometimes, and because it's costly, it's only sometimes, you can have GPS positioning measurements. And so you further constrain your model with this information. Okay? And just to give you a flavor of the language, this is how we program that. We say at each time step, we sample the state not too far from the previous value, right? So in a multivariate Gaussian that is centered around the previous value after some motion, so it's motion model that you can choose, and with some noise. Then you constrain your model by saying, I want the measured acceleration to be not too far from the actual acceleration. And then, and here we use one of the control structure of the language, we say when we have a GPS measurement, we link this measurement to the variable pulse, and we say we want the measured position to be not too far from the inferred position. Okay? Okay. So you can think of that as something that you would typically solve with a Kalman filter or an extended Kalman filter. But here, we want the programmer to only write this model and leave the compiler and the runtime do the work for us. And so now, if we are trying to see what is an execution of this program, so at the first time step, I receive a U and an acceleration, a command and an acceleration, and I know output instead of a value, an entire distribution. So this is just the projection on the position, for example. So at the first time step, I'm assuming that I'm around 1 or 0. Then I keep on doing like, I receive another acceleration so my Gaussian can broaden or whatever. And then at the third time step, I receive a position signal. So I will shrink my Gaussian around the value that is measured and so on and so on. So what is the semantics of such a language? So to define the semantics of the language, we started from a formalization that was proposed by Paul Caspi and Marc Pouzet in 98, where we interpret the streams as state machines. So a state machine is simply defined by an initial state, S, and a transition function. And you can represent the transition function with these small boxes here, where we say, if I give you the current state, you can output the next step and an output value, right? So if you repeatedly hit this box by passing the state for each subsequent instance, you will end up with a stream of value. So to give you a very simple example, the constant one, how we can lift the constant one to a stream. So there is no state, the state is completely empty, you don't really care what's on this wire, it's just unit, and at each time step, I output the constant one. Now for a more interesting example, the unit delay that allows me to shift, to refer to the previous value, so to shift a stream in time, can be implemented as follows. In the state, I store the state of the defining equation, here, that I'm trying to compute, and the previous value that was computing. And then each time I fire the transition function, I output the previous value that was stored, compute the next value, and store it into the state. Okay? So if I go back to the simple counter example that I presented in the beginning, I can plug all these wires together in my transition function and end up with a circuit that looks like this. So that's simple. But if I pull on all the wires, this simplifies quite a bit, and we can see what happens during an execution. So if I start with this initial state, with empty and zero, I enter the circuit and I can split my state to feed the two boxes. I end up with zero and one, So I compute one, and I can remerge this value in the state because I had the pre-operators. And I output one and the next state. I can take this step, this state to compute the next time step. I resplit, so I redo exactly the same thing. Now I compute two and output two and so on. Okay. So we have a deterministic semantics, and to lift that to probabilistic stream, we will do something that was showed multiple times today and yesterday, is we will use the measure-based semantics that was introduced by Kozen a while ago. And the idea is that compared to deterministic streams, the transition function of a probabilistic stream now returns a measure over all possible pairs, states, and values. Okay? So we can always take a deterministic expression and lift it to a probabilistic expression. So you can always interpret deterministic expression in a probabilistic context. And to do that, we use the Dirac delta functions. We say the only pair that is valid is the one that is returned by the expression. And the inference look like this. So the state of the inference is a distribution of states. So what we do is that we know that the probabilistic model takes one state as an input. So we will integrate over all possible states here. We end up with a measure mu, and this is not normalized, so we can just normalize this measure over pair to obtain nu. And here we end up with a probability distribution over pairs, states, and value, and we just need to split this into the two marginals to end up with a distribution of states that we will need to for the next step, to feed the inference for the next step, and the distribution over values that we output to the user. Okay, that is one possible semantics, and some of you may disagree with this definition. Why is that? So you have here a very simple example. So this is the paradigmatic coin example where you are trying to infer the bias of a coin from a stream of observation. So you say initially, and here the init keyword declares a constant parameter. So I declare the z parameter, which is the bias of my coin, as an uniform distribution between 0 and 1, so it can be anything between 0 and 1. And at each time step, remember that this is all stream processors, I observe that an observation follows the Bernoulli distribution of parameter z. But this observation here is the constant true. So with my semantics, that is that we call the CAN semantics, what I do is that I'm only limited to the observation I've seen so far. So at the first time step, I've seen one true value. So I said the distribution is a beta distribution with parameters 1 and 2, right? Then at the second time step, it's a beta distribution with parameters 1 and 3, then 1 and 4. And so what it's doing is that bias that are toward 1 are becoming more and more likely as you stream your program. But as I said, this is a constant, this is true. So an alternative view, and if you were in a language with lazy stream and you could do a fixed point semantics, you might say, but I know the answer. Like the answer is Dirac over one. I know that the bias of this coin is one, right? And at each time step, this bias should be one. And in particular, this might be a problem because with this interpretation, I might take some decisions that are very bad. Like, for example, at the first time step, I might say, if there is a slight chance that the bias is 0.6, I turn right. And I will turn right here, but I have no reason to do that. So you have this view where you declare a constant parameter, but this constant is actually moving, or the view of this constant is moving across time. On the other hand, for the alternative semantics, that might be better, but you need to know the future to compute the semantics. And this is something that we cannot do in a reactive context, especially since this constant could be an input or could be something that is fed by the environment. So there is really nothing we can do. My point here being this is what we need for the reactive settings. Okay, so now we have a language and the semantics. What kind of inference can we use on that? And what is great is that we had a talk yesterday on sequential Monte Carlo, so you already know the answer. The problem with our inference here, as always, is that you end up with integrals that are untractable, so we need some kind of approximate method. And the simplest one is a particle filter, where you approximate you approximate your integral by a set of particles. So to do that, you give an alternative interpretation to your program, where whenever you see a sample statement, you draw at random, and when you see an observed statement, you give a score saying how good this particle fits my data. Okay? So then you can duplicate this code for all your particles. Each particle at each time step will compute the next step, a value and a score. You can gather all these values to approximate a distribution, and then you're happy, you can split the distribution and so on. Okay. But in practice, and for complex models, simple particle filters can be impractical. You may require a lot of computing power because you might need billions of particles. And sometimes you can, depending on the shape of your model, that can lead to a relatively poor approximation. And one thing is that exact inference is often possible not necessarily for the entire model, but for some small pieces inside your model, you can do exact inference. And what we used is a semi-symbolic inference scheme that is called delayed sampling, that was introduced by Lawrence Murray and co-authors in 2018. And the idea is to perform as much as possible exact computations and fall back to a particle filter only when symbolic computation fails. So basically, you still maintain all your particles, so you have a set of n particles, and all these particles are trying to do as much as possible symbolic math, and when they fail, they will just draw samples when needed. And under the hood, what we use to do that is conjugacy relationships between random variables, which will allow us to incorporate observation analytically and sample only when necessary. To give an example for those who are not familiar with that, so here is an example of a conjugacy relationship. So I can assume that X is drawn from a normal distribution with a certain mean and a certain variance, and Y is drawn from a normal distribution centered on X. And if I have these two assumptions, I know that the distribution of X, knowing that Y takes the value V, is also a normal distribution, and I can compute the characteristics of these distributions. So if I take my tracker example and simplify it to put it in one dimension because it's easier to represent on one slide. So it's exactly the same example. I say at each time step, so at the first time step, I sample X from a Gaussian centered around zero. And at all subsequent time step, I will sample X near the previous position, okay, using this pre-keyword. And then I assume that the observation is not too far from the estimated X. Okay, so let's look at what happened in one particle. So first, at the first time step, as I sample from a Gaussian centered around zero, so what I do is that I will dynamically build the Bayesian network that corresponds to my execution. So I introduce a first random variable and associate it to a normal distribution. Then I see an observed statement. I introduce a new random variable that has no real name but represents this distribution here, the Gaussian that is centered on X. So you have a dependency between this node here that represents X and this new random variable. And then I know that I have an observation which is 3. So I know that this distribution here is actually a Dirac distribution. And now I can use my conjugacy relationships to update my belief on the distribution of X. And so I can update this distribution. Now I can move on to the next time step. I introduce a new random variable that now depends on the previous value of X. And I see a new observation with now a value 5. So I can switch this distribution to a Dirac distribution and keep updating the distribution that we have for the variable X. And so on, and so on. Okay. So one thing is that, one thing that you have to be careful when implementing this algorithm is that you need pointers in both directions for all the nodes. So you need a pointer from a father to each child to be able to add some nodes to your data structure. But when you do the conditioning, you need also a pointer from the child to the father to update the distribution. If you do that, you see that you have a chain that is forming, like the Bayesian network that you are building at a time will grow infinitely. And actually, if you do a naive implementation of delayed sampling and you track the memory footprint of this simple example, you see that it actually grows linearly. And this is a huge problem for us because in a reactive settings, a reactive system is not supposed to stop. Like if you think about a plane, if your tracker stops in the middle of a flight, that would be a huge issue. Okay, so what we propose is a streaming delayed sampling, which is a way to change the data structure and the runtime to delay some of the operations. So for example, the conditioning and the sampling, such that we can minimize the number of the pointer in the data structure while keeping the runtime correct. And if we do that, You notice here that some of the nodes become unreachable as you go during the execution. And since they are unreachable, we can collect them at runtime and keep the memory footprint bounded. Okay, so now that we have a language, a semantics, and an inference scheme, I will try to show you a small demo. This is an implementation of a SLAM model, so a simultaneous location and mapping, where a robot, here this green circle, is trying to infer both his localization and a map of its environment. So this is a very simple example, so it's a simple map, it's a 2D array of squares, and the squares can be black or white. Now the problem is that the robot is very faulty, so it has slippery wheels. So sometimes the command is go left and the robot will stay in place. And also the sensor is not very good, and so sometimes it looks on the ground and it sees black and the ground is actually white. So let's try to see this in practice. Okay, so I can manually control my robot here. So you can see it's an Atari-style graphical user interface. But I also have an automatic mode where the robot will try to explore the region with the most uncertainty on the map, right? And this is an example of inference in the loop, where based on the result of the inference at one time step, I will compute a command that will lead me to the region with the most uncertainty. So I will leave it play with the map a little bit, but you should already see that it's a very corporate map. That's the wrong color, sorry about that. Okay. So how can we evaluate our proposition? So we have multiple language features. So we have some, we are able to define models with some moving parameters. So this is typically the state space models that Nicolas presented. So can think about the position of the robot. We also have some, we also have the ability to define fixed parameters. Think about the map that is a parameter that is shared across all time steps. And we have inference in the loop. And to compare how good is our inference, we will compare it to a simple particle filter with a bootstrap filter with a resampling. So this is the result on the SLAM example. And you can see two interesting things here. So as expected, if you look at the particle filter accuracy, it will decrease as you increase the number of... this is the error, by the way, so less is better. So the error decreases if you increase the number of particles. This is to be expected. And for the semi-symbolic inference scheme, it decreases faster. So it drops to a plateau of accuracy faster. And it starts lower, so it seems to be actually better. But if you look at the runtime, the execution times, you can see that streaming delayed sampling is always slower than a particle filter. And again, this is not very surprising since we have all these symbolic computations to perform at each time step. However, if you think about the trade-off that we want for an inference scheme, you see that you always need less particles for streaming delayed sampling than for a particle filter. And if we want to make this more concrete on a bunch of benchmarks, you see here the execution time that is required to hit a target accuracy. You can think about the maximum accuracy for a given model. And you see here that streaming delayed sampling is always faster than a particle filter. And for two examples, the particle filter failed to converge to the target accuracy. So the SLAM example and the multi-target tracker. And one last thing that is interesting is that for three of the models, Beta Bernoulli, a simple coin example, a Kalman model, and a robot example, streaming delayed sampling was able to compute the exact solution. So you actually need one particle to find the exact solution. Okay, let me say a little bit about static analysis on this kind of program. So one key property for reactive probabilistic programs is execution in bounded memory. So I showed you that we proposed an inference scheme where we were able to collect nodes and still execute in bounded memory, but is that true for every program? So if you look at the simple tracker, as I said, as you go on the execution, you can be sure that you will never use the previous values and the previous observations, so you can just discard these nodes. So this can obviously execute in bounded memory. But if I slightly change the example and I say, oh, I'm also interested in an estimation of the initial position. So I just add one line into my program. And here you see that I can collect the nodes that correspond to the observations, but I need to keep this x0 in my program state, and so I cannot collect the nodes that are in between, and I end up with a growing chain of nodes. So this cannot execute in bounded memory, and this is a problem because this is a perfectly valid Probzelius program, right? So. The question is, can we determine if a given program will run in bounded memory, and can we design a static analysis to do that statically? And the answer is yes, and to do that, we first need to abstract the execution of a program using a trace. So the trace will simply record random variables and their dependencies, and observations. So you have here x0, which depends on nothing, y0, who only depend on x0, and we observe y0 at the first time step. Okay. In parallel, I record the pointer in the program state, so the variable x here points to x0, and if I go on to the next step, I sample x1, y1, and observe y1, and the variable x points to x1, and the previous value of x points to x0. Okay. So we actually identify two problematic chains in traces that can lead to unbounded memory executions. So first one is you need to bound the chains of variables before an observed statement. And the second one is you need to bound the length of the chain that are referenced in your program state. If you have these two properties, we can prove that it will execute in bounded memory. And then we can define a static analysis to over-approximate these two properties, tracking the variables that are introduced but not used, or tracking the maximal paths between pairs of variables. And this analysis will be sound. So to take a simple example here, for the first property, you see that all the variables that are introduced are consumed by an observed statement. Y0 is consumed because it's observed, and X0 is consumed because Y0 is consumed. And the same is true at every time step. So we are okay. And for the unseparated path properties, we have one problematic chain, which is the infinite chain of X across time. But you see that in the program state, I always reference the current value and the previous value. So the maximal length of a chain in my program state is one. So this executes in bounded memory. However, for the problematic example, if you look at my program state, I always reference x0, and so the distance between x and x0 is growing over time. So it doesn't execute this bounded memory. So we can evaluate our static analysis on the same set of benchmarks, and we see that the analysis is precise for most models. We have two models where the memory is only probabilistically bounded, so it's challenging for a static analyzer. We have no idea how to deal with that. And also, one example where the memory is always bounded, but it's also challenging for the analyzer because it's a SLAM example, and there is some pieces of the map that you may not explore, and we have no way to tell that it will lead to a bounded memory execution. Okay, I will, in the interest of time, I will just switch to the takeaway message. So I presented you the design and implementation of PropZelus, which proposed parallel composition of deterministic and probabilistic modules, control structure and inference in the loop. We propose the measure-based semantics and streaming inference scheme that is based on the semi-symbolic inference. And also a static analysis to determine if programs can run in bounded memory. If you want to know more, everything is open source. You can play with the compiler and the runtime. And we have two papers that describe the language and inference and the static analysis. And to give one word about ongoing and future work, so we have we propose a JAX-based backend for PropZelus, just for simple particle filter to parallelize the execution. We have, with Louis Mandel and Ryan Tekin, sorry. There is one work with Wais Azizian and Marc Lelarge about porting some of this idea to Julia, so doing an embedded DSL in Julia with this idea of synchronous programming. And the last part is hybrid probabilistic programming, where we use the continuous time ability of Zelus, where you can define ODEs and continuous time dynamics, and try to lift that with probabilistic constructs. And thank you very much, and if you have any questions.